In the wilderness, Satan makes Jesus several tempting offers. He doesn't attack Jesus. No, he doesn't try to abuse him. Rather, he offers gifts. Sort of like the telemarketer at 7 p.m. First one, bread. As the text tells us, Jesus has been famished, fasting for 40 days. What of these blessings would be more welcome than bread? And how powerful that metaphor is. I mean, we work for our daily bread. We are bread winners. We're out there trying to earn them. We know the staff of life, all of the many ways we describe bread. Of course, we after the recession are thinking about bread in different ways. I'm glad to see things rebounding a bit. But that's another temptation. Now, Jesus responds to this temptation for bread, turning stones into bread, by refusing it. Then Satan moves on to the temptation of power. Jesus is tempted by Satan. Satan saying, if you would just pay appropriate homage, all of the power, all of these kingdoms, I will place at your feet if you worship. Implied here is that Satan is in charge of such principalities and powers. I think for anybody who's ever dealt with a group of people more than two, or dealt with a political process, perhaps a bit cynically, one could think that, yeah, it does appear that the devil's in charge of some things out there. Politics perhaps being one of them. But I can't help but hear the word power and think, oh, I think in more benign ways. I mean, I think of power and light, for example. I think, you know, then I think of my high school physics days, thinking that power, energy, you know, what are these things but the ability to do work? An optimist though I am, I'm thinking the ability to do good. So I'm thinking power is a neutral thing, if not a good thing. And yet, when you look at the way Jesus was tempted by Satan with the power over the sway of hearts and minds and political power, knowing the context with Caesar fully ensconced and so very brutal. Quite a temptation. Then I think back again, power in the hands of Jesus. Now that has to be a good thing. If anyone could use it well, he has to have been the one. Then I think about the times we've drifted a bit. We think about superpowers. We think about destabilizing equilibrium and might leading to an offset. But think about power in geopolitical terms. And of course, perhaps it gets murky in your mind. I know it does in mine. And before I know it, I'm back to the power that Caesar influenced. That kind of power that we believe Jesus was tempted with. And as he thought for a moment, should he replace Caesar? Should he bring about a righteous kingdom where hearts would be transformed and good could be done through benevolent uses of power? How tempting that must have been. And to this, Jesus says, no. Finally, maybe Satan wising up a bit, realizing that this is not some rube. This is not Jesus' first rodeo, so to speak. There's something in him that was different from other prophets and holy people he had tempted in times past. Satan comes up with a challenging one. And this is me taking liberties, perhaps with the text, but I think interpreting it accurately. Satan then offers Jesus religion, an ordered response to spiritual questions, a religion that seems to put God under the sway of human beings. Things done decently and in order. And perhaps even on occasion, a bit of spiritual showbiz, showmanship, if you like. Kind of a Vegas-y sort of a religion, if you will. Grand, impressive, to the point that a religious display would bring about converts instantly. You would just have folks in the palm of your hand. They'd want to adhere to the law and to the prophets and do righteousness out in the world. crowds would flock to. You could take them almost anywhere. Isn't religion a good thing? Yet, when faced with this temptation, Jesus again says no. I don't know about you, but as we've dealt with Luke's gospel, here we are, only barely into chapter 4. We're not hearing much teaching from Jesus. Very much like a three-year-old, we're hearing the word no a lot. I don't know how much you can build on renunciations like that. How interesting it would be to get to know somebody just based on what he turns down or what he pushes away from, what he resists. You know, that's very, very different. Very strange, if you will. Knowing someone based on what they refuse. We know that no is probably the smallest word we've got out there, but it's so revealing. We usually want to see affirmations that tell a person about what this other person is all about. A bit of a party platform, if you will, but we're not getting that with Jesus in chapter 4. And to all of this, we hear about the devil, we hear about Satan, waiting until a more opportune time. Makes you think, too, what could be a better time? You've got Jesus half-starved and alone in the wilderness. Easy pickings, one would think, for someone as, certainly as powerful and alluring as Satan. Yet, in the midst of these renunciations, Jesus still manages to hold his own, via negativa though it is, standing up against his culture, resisting money and possessions. In Jesus' day, that meant you were righteous if you had possessions and money. Resisting the temptations of political power and resisting the temptations of a compelling religion where righteousness is so attractive that all become adherents. And more than that, Jesus then is also Jesus now, challenging these same sorts of problems that we're tempted to fall to as well. But instead, our lexicon is slightly different. What tempts us, not the negative, not the no, no, no. We are inclined to fall for the yes, yes, yes. That's the modern mantra, if you will. It's not about what we renounce. It's, to get to us, you have to come at us through what affirmations we make. The affirmations slide right in, rather uncritically, I think. Some of you, I think, in terms of your management work, know about the yes, not the yes but the yes and. Some of you are nodding, you've been well schooled in this. The yes and folks are able to coach you so that they listen to you and they say yes, but they add something. And before you know it, you found that through their yes and work, you've been turned 180 degrees to the land of no, and you don't even realize it anymore. Yes, you've been, yeah. At least in Jesus' day, a no was a no and a yes was a yes. We affirm everything. I know of a young woman in my parish in Coronado, high schooler at the time, went off to college, did exceptionally well, came back, and during her grad school experience, kind of crossing into the world of work, she took on some volunteer work with Episcopal Community Services, and she just thought it would broaden her resume out a little bit. And it certainly did. She worked with homeless populations, she worked with addicted youth, she worked with the mentally ill, and those who were close to homelessness, that they tried to keep from homelessness. And in all of this work, she found that she truly was changing. And her dissertation advisor suggested that, you know, this is a phenomenal waste of some great and God-given talents. He said to her, quote, "This is a terrible waste. You're wasting what God has given you, and you're turning your back on potential and your career." Yet, she became more enlivened to the work she was doing that was supposedly just an internship, unpaid work, and it led to an entry-level job, and then a staff job with Episcopal Community Services, and then, later, a policy job, as her life just took her in a different turn, as she said no to some things, and God said a profound yes to a new life that she discovered in the midst of this wonderful work. As she would tell you, wouldn't take nothing for my journey. Now, no going back. Those skills put to a great use. When Jesus was confronted by the devil, he resisted Satan, not with those forces of violence or coercion that we're so used to hearing about the devil use. No, what Jesus used. He used words. How powerful is that? And not just any words. He used the Hebrew Scriptures. He'd been steeped in them. He certainly knew them. And if you were to boil those three temptations down to very simple statements, Jesus used the word no. He said no effectively three times. Saying no to Satan. Perhaps there's someone in your orbit that has managed to say no to some of the luring aspects of life. And in their saying no, they've opened their lives up in new ways to different things. Maybe these choices have challenged us. Maybe it's somebody in your own family I'm talking about who's gone over here instead of where he or she was expected to go. And then going in these directions, experience rebirth, finding their soul's resonance or some great work, despite what we think, despite the criticisms. I tend to be drawn to stories like this. I don't know about you. I tend to look at what must have cost them to be able to say no to those alluring temptations and to find their own road and to then walk it. On this, the first Sunday of Lent, as we've walked through the great litany that certainly reminds us of affirmations and renunciations. We renounce the world, the flesh, and the devil. We can renounce that, but we can't define it. It's difficult in the prayer book to define it. But we think we know it when we see it. But we put ourselves on solid ground walking after Jesus, following one step at a time that way of the cross, knowing that he's gone on before us. He was able to say no when it counted. He empowers us and enables us to do the same today as we follow after him. Yes, life will present you with circumstances where the crowd may be moving you toward the yes exit, to that door, to that channel, to that decision. Times like that, ask yourself those deep, heartfelt questions. Yes, what would Jesus do? What is God calling me to do in this situation? Everyone's saying it's the best thing. What does my heart tell me? Don't be afraid to say no. Don't be afraid to step back and say, Jesus, where are you taking me? Where will this course of action lead? Slow down. Say no if you have to. Believe me, you'll be in good company.